Chapter 20. The surviving members of Sergeant Gregorius's squad are Corporal Basson Key and Lancer Arenwal Gaspa K.T. Reddick. Key is a small man, compact and quick in both reflexes and intelligence, while Reddick is tall, almost as tall as the giant Gregorius, but is as thin as the sergeant is massive. Reddick is from the Lambert Ring territories, and has the radiation scars, skeletal frame, and independent bent so stereotypical of Stroiders. DeSoya has learned that the man had never set foot on a full-sized, full-G world until he was 23 standard years old. RNA medication and serious PAX military exercise has toughened and strengthened the trooper until he can fight on any world. Reserved to the point of muteness, AGKT Reddick listens well, follows orders well, and, as the battle on Hyperion showed, survives well. Corporal Key is as voluble as Reddick is silent. During their first day of discussion, Key's questions and comments show insight and clarity, despite the brain-fogging effects of resurrection. All four of the men are shaken by the experience of death. DeSoya tries to convince them that it gets easier with experience, but his own shaken body and wits put the lie to these reassurances. Here, without counseling and therapy and the welcoming resurrection chaplains, each of the PAX's soldiers is dealing with the trauma as best he can. Their conferences on the first day in Parvati space are interrupted frequently as fatigue or sheer emotion overcome them. Only Sergeant Gregorius is outwardly unshaken by the experience. On the third day, they meet in Raphael's tiny wardroom cubby to plot their final course of action. In 2 months and 3 weeks, that ship is going to translate into this system less than 1,000 clicks from where we're station holding, says Father Captain DeSoya, and we have to be certain we can intercept it and detain the girl. None of the Swiss Guard soldiers has asked why the girl's detention is required. None will discuss the issue until their commanding officer, DeSoya, raises it first. Each will die if necessary to carry out the cryptic order.
We don't know who else is on board the ship, right? Says Corporal Key.
They have discussed these items, but memories are faulty for the first few days of their new lives.
No, says DeSoya.
We don't know the armament of the ship, says Key, as if checking off a mental list.
Correct.
We don't know if Parvati is the ship's destination.
Correct.
It could be, says Corporal Key, that the ship is scheduled to rendezvous with another ship here, or perhaps the girl means to meet someone on the planet.
DeSoya nods. The Raphael doesn't have the sensors of my old Tort ship, but we're sweeping everything between the Oort cloud and Parvati itself. If another ship translates before the girls, we'll know at once.
Ouster? Says Sergeant Gregorius.
DeSoya raises his hands.
Everything's speculation. I can tell you that the child is considered a threat to the PAX, so it's reasonable to conclude that the Ousters, if they know of her existence, might want to grab her. We're ready if they try.
Key rubs his smooth cheek.
I still can't quite believe we could hop home in a day if we wanted to, or go for help.
Home for Corporal Key is the Jamnu Republic on Deneb Dre. They have discussed why it would be useless to ask for help. The closest PAX warship is the St. Anthony, which should be, if DeSoya's orders were obeyed, in hot pursuit of the girl's ship.
I've tight-beamed the commander of the PAX garrison on Parvati, says DeSoya. As our computer inventory showed, they have just their orbital patrol craft and a couple of rock jumpers. I've ordered him to put every spacecraft they have into cislunar defensive positions, to alert all the outposts on the planet and to await further orders. If the girl was to get past us and land there, the PAX would find her.
What kind of world is Parvati?
Asks Gregorius. The man's bass rumble of a voice always gets DeSoya's attention.
It was settled by reformed Hindus not long after the Hajira, says DeSoya, who has accessed all this on the ship's computer.
Desert world. Not enough oxygen to support humans. Mostly CO2 atmosphere. And it was never enough of a success to terraform. So either the environments are tailored or the people are.
Population was never large, a few dozen million before the fall. Fewer than half a million now, and most of them live in the one big city of Gandaji.
Christians? Asks Key.
DeSoya guesses that the question is more than idle curiosity. Key asks few random questions.
A few thousand in Gandaji have converted, says DeSoya. There is a new cathedral there, St. Malachy's, and most of the born-again are prominent business people who favor joining the PACs. They talk the planetary government, a sort of elective oligarchy, into inviting the PACs garrison here about 50 standard years ago. They're close enough to the outback to worry about the ousters.
Key nods.
I just wondered if the garrison could count on the populace reporting it when the girl's ship lands.
Doubtful, says DeSoya. 99% of the world is empty, never settled, or gone back to sand dunes and lichen fields, with most of the people huddled around the big bauxite mines near Gandaji. But the orbital patrols would track her.
If she gets that far, says Gregorius.
Which she will not, says Father Captain DeSoya. He touches a tabletop monitor, which brings up the graphic he has prepared. Here's the intercept plan. We snooze until T-minus 3 days. Don't worry, remember, Fugue doesn't have the hangover time of resurrection. Half an hour to shake the cobwebs out. Okay, so T-minus 3 days. The alarm goes off. Raphael's been looping out to here.
He taps the diagram at a point two-thirds the way around the ellipsoid trajectory. We know the ship's C-plus entry velocity, which means we know their exit velocity. It will be about 0.03C. So if they're decelerating toward Parvati at the same rate they left Hyperion...
The trajectory and timeline diagrams fill the screen.
This is hypothetical, but their translation point is not. It will be here.
He touches a stylus to a red point 10 AUs from the planet. Their own trajectory ellipsoid blinks its way to that point.
And here is where we intercept them, less than a minute from their translation point.
Gregorius leans over his monitor.
We'll all be going like a cross-damned bat out of hell, pardon the language, Father.
DeSoya smiles. You are absolved, my son. Yes, velocities will be high, as will be our combined delta Vs if their ship commences deceleration toward Parvati. But relative velocities for the two ships will be almost nil.
How close will we be, Captain? Says Key.
The man's black hair glistens in the overhead spots.
When they translate, we'll be bearing down on them at a distance of 600 clicks. Within 3 minutes, we'll be able to throw a rock at them.
Key frowns.
But what will they throw at us?
Unknown, says DeSoya.
But the Raphael is tough. I'm betting that her shields can take anything this unidentified ship throws at us.
Lancer Reddick grunts.
Bad bet to lose.
DeSoya swivels his chair to look at the trooper. He had almost forgotten Reddick was there.
Yes, he says, but we have the advantage of being close. Whatever they throw at us, they'll have a limited time to throw.
And what do we throw at them? Rumbles Gregorius.
DeSoya pauses. I've gone over Raphael's armament with you, he says at last. If this were an ouster warship, we could fry, bake, ram, or burn it. Or we could just make its crew die quietly. Raphael carries death beam weaponry. At 500 clicks, there would be no doubt of their effectiveness.
But we're not going to use any of that, continues the father captain, unless we absolutely have to disable the ship.
Can you do that without danger of hurting the girl? Asks Key.
Not with 100% assurance of not hurting her and whoever else is aboard, says DeSoya.
He pauses again, takes a breath, and continues.
That's why you're going to board her.
Gregorius grins. His teeth are very large and very white.
We grab space armor for all of us before leaving the St. Thomas Akira, grumbles the giant happily. But it'd be better if we practiced in it before the actual boarding.
DeSoya nods. 3 days enough? Gregorius is still grinning.
I'd rather have a week.
All right, says the father captain. We'll wake up a week before intercept. Here's a schematic of the unidentified ship.
I thought it was unidentified, says Key, looking at the ship's plans now filling the monitors. The spacecraft is a needle with fins at one end, a child's caricature of a spaceship.
We don't know its specific identity or registration, says DeSoya. But the St. Anthony tight-beamed video that it and the Bonaventure took of the ship before we translated. It's not Ouster.
Not Ouster, not Pax, not Mercantilis, not a spin ship or tort ship, says Key. What the hell is it?
DeSoya advances the images to ship cross-sections. Private spacecraft, hegemony era, he says softly. Only 30 or so ever made. At least 400 years old, probably older.
Corporal Key whistles softly.
Gregorius rubs his huge jaw. Even Rettig looks impressed behind his impassive mask.
I didn't know there ever were private spacecraft, says the corporal. C+, I mean.
The hegemony used to reward high muckamucks with them, says DeSoya. Prime Minister Gladstone used to have one. So did General Horace Glennon Height.
The hegemony didn't reward him with one, says Key with a chuckle.
Glennon Height was the most infamous and legendary opponent the early hegemony ever had. The Outback's Hannibal to the World Web's Rome.
No, agrees Father Captain DeSoya. The general stole his from the planetary governor of Sol Draconi Septim. Anyway, the computer says that all of these private ships were accounted for before the fall, destroyed or reconfigured for force use and then decommissioned. But the computer appears to be wrong.
Not the first time, grumbles Gregorius. Do these long-range images show any armament or defensive systems?
No. The original ships were civilians, no weapons, and the St. Bonaventure's sensors didn't pick up any acquisition radars or pulse readings before the Shrike killed the imaging team, says DeSoya. But this ship's been around for centuries, so we have to assume that it has been modified. But even if it has modern Ouster standoff weaponry, Raphael should be able to get in close, fast, while we hold off their lances. Once we're alongside, they can't use kinetic weapons. By the time we grapple, the energy weapons will be useless.
Hand to hand, says Gregorius to himself.
The sergeant is studying the schematic.
They'd be waiting at the airlock. So we'll blow a new door, here, and here.
DeSoya feels a prickling of alarm. We can't let the atmosphere out, the girl. Gregorius shows a shark's grin.
Not to worry, sir. It takes less than a minute to rig a big catch bag on the hull. I brought several with the armor. And then we blow the hull section inward, scoot in.
He keys a closer image.
I'll rig this for StimSim. So we can rehearse in 3D for a few days. I'd like another week for Sim.
The black face turns toward DeSoya.
We may not get any fugue beauty sleep after all, sir.
Key is tapping his lip with a finger.
Question, Captain.
DeSoya looks at him.
I understand that under no circumstances can we harm the girl, but what about others that get in the way?
DeSoya sighs. He has been waiting for the question. I prefer that no one else dies on this mission, Corporal.
Yes, sir, says Key, his eyes alert. But what if they try to stop us?
Father Captain DeSoya blanks the monitor. The crowded cubby smells of oil and sweat and ozone.
My orders were that the child is not to be harmed, he says slowly, carefully.
Nothing was said about anyone else. If there's someone or something else on the ship, and they try to get in the way, consider them expendable. Defend yourselves, even if you have to shoot before you're certain you're in danger.
Kill them all, mutters Gregorius, except the kid, and let God sort them out.
DeSoya has always hated that ancient mercenary joke.
Do whatever you have to do without endangering the girl's life or health, he says.
What if there's only one other on board standing between us and the girl,
says Rettig. The other three men look at the Stroider.
But it's the Shrike thing,
he finishes. The cubby is silent, except for the omnipresent ship sounds, expanding and contracting metal from the hull, the whisper of ventilators, the hum of equipment, the occasional burp of a thruster. If it's the Shrike,
begins Father Captain DeSoya. He pauses.
If it's the wee shrikey, says Sergeant Gregorius, I think we can bring a few surprises for it. This round may not go so easy for that spiked son of a bitch. Pardon my language, Father.
As your priest, says DeSoya, I will warn you again about the use of profanity. As your commanding officer, I order you to come up with as many surprises as you can to kill that spiked son of a bitch. They adjourn to eat their evening meal and plan their respective strategies.